I'm Gab, he's Jules. Gray and cloudy skies over West London today, but that's okay because we've got midweek football.
Oh, yes.
We've got, sadly, we've got some COVID to talk about. Yeah. We'll salute Aguero. Moving on. I want to do something a little bit different today. You thought, normally we go for like the big game that everybody's talking about. But I think we've talked a lot about Manchester City. We'll get to them.
Yeah, we get to the seven goals.
I want to dive a little bit deeper into Arsenal and their game against West Ham. Because we have a lot of Arsenal fans in our who listen to us. And a lot of them have basically been miserable for a very, very long time.
I think, a bit harsh.
No, look, there's a negativity surrounding the club that goes back to Wenger, right? And I see green shoots. And I'm not just referring to the win over West Ham, because this was a depleted West Ham. But we're seeing some positive things.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I was at the game and I thought first half hour was very average between the two teams. And I think there was a lot of slow build-up from Arsenal and there was not much with the ball for West Ham. But then it's sort of the second half was much better from Arsenal. As soon as they play with a bit of verticality and you've got runs for whoever drops a bit deeper like Lacazette or Odegaard, I think it helps them. And I think there's something, they're clearly building something interesting. The back five is interesting, I think, to watch and to dissect. Ramsdale personality, the Gabriel White partnership, even Tomiyasu, who is maybe not the best with the ball at his feet. He's a very intelligent player, and I think that's what they need on that right-hand side. I like the difference between the two fullbacks, the way Tierney plays and the way Tomiyasu plays. So I think there's a lot of good things they're doing, but they're still far from the top three, for example, which are another league.
We're going to delve into that further, but you mentioned the top three. I want to have a word on West Ham, because obviously they were hit pretty hard by injuries. No Zuma, no avenging Angelo Bonna. Yeah. And it's
not Cresswell as no Ben Johnson. So
right. You're going with Diop and Dawson, and that's fine. But when these guys are playing every game in those circumstances, I thought they approached it the way you would expect them to, keep it tight. I think they would have been happy with a point. They know how big the gap.
Played for it.
And they played for it. We got to get to the Soufal sending off. I don't want to just hammer referees on this one, but I'm not sure it was a penalty at all, and I don't understand why it's a booking.
It's over the ball. He hits
the ball.
Well,
his foot goes over the.
Not much of it. And even Moy said after the game, it was an easy tackle for him to make. He made a mess out of it, Soufal. It was easy to get the ball or even block the ball. Instead, his leg goes over the ball. And I can see why, if he hadn't been given, the VAR would not have given it. But I can see why VAR didn't say to the ref, listen, go and have a look because you made a big mistake. It's not a pen. And even Moyes agreed to a certain extent.
First of all, as much as I love David Moyes, and I really, really like the guy, he's not the god of referees or officiating.
No, but it's his own player. It's his own team.
That's fine, but I don't care what
he said. Like, this is crazy, we got robbed, or we got this, we got that.
Well, it's fine. He wasn't robbed because it was 1-0.
No, but still.
To me, that is exactly a situation where, viewed from the outside, I know Mark Klattenberg said the same thing. I'm broadening out one of the dysfunctions with VAR, especially in the Premier League, not only in the Premier League, is the guy who was Banks, I think, was a VAR.
Yeah.
He's a no-name referee, and he's afraid to point this out to the match official. Because every time the interview, there's still this culture, and there shouldn't be, that like, oh, VAR can only intervene if it's a clear and obvious error. And I think we should get away from that, to the fact this is a contentious decision. It's a difficult decision because you have the element of the yellow as well.
Yeah.
It's certainly not cut and dried. I'm okay with the referee making the decision, but this would have been a clear point where he says, hey, listen, not saying you got this one wrong, but there's several moving parts to it, the way he slides in and everything. You take a look at it, and you're a better referee. You decide.
But if Taylor says, I've seen it clear enough, I don't need to go and see it again. I know his leg was over the ball, and that he made contact with Lacazette, that he could have get the ball cleanly, he didn't. It's in the box, it's a foul, it's a second yellow. So, maybe Taylor said that. I don't need to go and see it.
But maybe Taylor
shouldn't
be saying that. Maybe Taylor shouldn't be saying that. Maybe we should be. It's not going to harm Taylor again. And I think we feel better about this. Going back to Arsenal, we're going to get into the Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang situation in a little more detail. Were you surprised that he wasn't involved at all?
I wasn't surprised. I thought it was inevitable, the captaincy to start with, that they stripped him off. You can debate on, is it right to put a statement out and go quite public, and you like transparency in football. Mm. I've got no problem with Arsenal saying, this is the decision we're making, instead of Arteta saying, oh, he doesn't feel well, or like Wenger used to do for so many years. But I think he's maybe a bit harsh, he was not involved in the matchday squad.
That's what surprised me, because I said at some point...
But it's a sanction, You know, they've said to him before...
Then say how long the sanction is.
But I think he'd probably be back for the next game. But there's a point where they said to him, listen, we can't have you breaching disciplinary rules.
We'll get into that in more detail. I was just kind of surprised, because I thought, for now, you need him, right?
Did you? And on the back of yesterday, did you need him?
You need him in your squad for now in the season, because otherwise, if something happens to Lacazette, then you're looking at Eddie Nketiah or Martinelli up front or whatever, right? He's part of your squad, you're paying
him.
I just think if the punishment is over, if it's a two-game punishment, fine. If the punishment is over, I was kind of surprised that he wasn't there. But maybe there's fitness issues as well. We're going to get into all that. We're going to assess West Ham. We're going to assess Arsenal, the rebuild. Bear with us. We don't talk about these guys very often. We're going to have all that on the Gavin Jules podcast. Okay, Jules, let's do that thing where we project forward. In fact, let's do that in a minute. Because first, I'm going to complete the Aubameyang thing.
Yeah.
You talked about transparency. It comes out and you stripped him of the captaincy. I'm always kind of curious when this happens. Remember back when Mourinho stripped Paul Pogba of the vice captaincy which... Yeah. I don't think anybody knew was a thing. Do Arsenal have a vice captain right now?
They've got a leadership group. It's even better.
Wait, is this a legacy of Emery?
It's still there. It's still there.
So who's in the leadership group?
Leno, Lacazette, Xhaka, Holding, and I guess Aubameyang.
Okay, so Leno, Lacazette, Xhaka, Holding. So you basically have the guy
Leno,
who just
Leno as well, maybe. Leno as well.
Yeah, Leno.
That's what I said. Leno, sorry.
So you got Leno and Holding, who never play.
Holding got... great new hair. Did you see the hair transplant? That's beautiful. He's a leader. He's in the leadership group. He's a winner. He doesn't play much, okay, but the hair now is perfect.
Okay.
It's important.
I sense that you're mocking.
No, at all. I think it's great. We know a lot of people who've had it done.
We certainly
Antonio do. Conte being obviously the goat of hair transplants.
Yeah, which by the way, I know this, but I just have to tell it again and again. Many, many years ago, as you know, Antonio Conte as a player was a pretty vicious, excitable player.
Yeah.
The Matrix, the legendary Marco Materazzi World Cup winner, unlike Conte, was also a pretty hard-ass player.
Yeah.
Some might even have called him dirty at times.
Yeah.
So after, there was one match where Materazzi was just kicking lumps out of whoever was playing up front for Juve at the time, and Conte obviously goes and, you know, feels he has...
So quite a young Materazzi then, yeah, I guess. Younger than Conte. So.
Yeah, no, he is. He's 4 or 5 years younger than Conte. And so Conte, you know, goes and he has to, since he's the midfield enforcer, he used to go and, like, looks up at Materazzi. And after the game, you know, there's afters, and Conte said something along the lines of... it was something like, oh, you know, Materazzi's ugly, he's uncoordinated, he's dirty, he can't play, shouldn't be playing football, you know, he's just some nasty
stuff.
To which Materazzi responded, yeah, but at least this is still my own hair.
Ah,
I still have a cat sitting on top of my head. But anyway, it's about hair job. But
so yeah, leadership group. Sorry, go back to leadership group.
But is this something that Arteta created, or is it a legacy of before?
No. There was one before. He kept it.
Well, Ozil was on it before, right? So
yeah.
Presumably he added to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I think he likes this idea of having people that, you know, they make the link between the squads, him, the staff.
Well, it is interesting that somebody like Leno, who, let's face it, you know, he was a starter, he's on starter money, he's not the starter now, is still a part of it and still feels like he's a commitment. Because the next logical step would be like, hey, Bernd, you know, I appreciate, you deserve to be a starter.
Yeah.
We're playing this other dude now because we think he's better than you, and we are trying to move you on somewhere else where you can play. It would seem like a logical thing to withdraw him from.
Yeah, but I think that one, he's liked in the dressing room. Two, being German, is very, you know, very good on structure and discipline and all of that. So that's why.
Okay, I just draw more stereotypes. Right?
No, it's true.
He wears sandals with socks. And okay, fine.
It's true.
So
It's true. It makes sense why he's there. That's what I meant.
Right. In this leadership group, you also have Aubameyang, who's obviously on the naughty step.
Yeah.
You have Lacazette, who is out of contract in June.
Yeah, which is the problem, because I think he's a natural captain.
And you have Xhaka, who extended his contract before, came back from injury,
yeah.
has had issues in terms of...
He was stripped off himself of the captaincy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It doesn't look great from the outside, and that's why...
No, but you can... Now, I think it gives you a good opportunity to look at your dressing room and your...
And choose a new leadership group.
No, not so much that, but say like, okay, you know, I think all in that leadership group would have an idea of who they think could be the captain. It could be Ramsdale, it could be Gabriel, you could go back to Xhaka, you could give it to Lacazette if you want, who I think is the captain in that dressing room anyway. Even when Aubameyang had the armband, Lacazette was the guy in that dressing room. The problem is that he will leave in 6 months, so it's a bit strange to give him the captaincy,
of course,
and everything that means, you know, as a club captain, to then having another one in 6 months. But I think it's not a bad opportunity to go, you know what, we can give more responsibility to Ben White, to Tierney, to whoever you want.
Well, I think that's a good point, because for me, I always found, when I first moved, it's good, they've gotten better in England. When I first moved here many years ago, when I was in school, and people would have endless debates about the captaincy, the England captaincy. Could Lineker be England captain? No, because he's a striker.
Yeah,
could Shilton? No, he's a goalkeeper.
Chat.
You know, like they had this mythical idea, the England, and they went on, John Terry, you know.
Yeah.
And I always kind of thought, and a lot of players have told me this, it's just a piece of cloth around your bicep.
No, that's not true.
You can be a captain and a leader.
The armband.
No, you can be a captain and a leader. Yeah, you can disrespect the armband, but sure. But you can be a captain and a leader without the armband, right?
Many are.
And many are, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Patrick Vieira was an Arsenal captain before he became Arsenal captain.
True.
He was still Arsenal captain when, you know, whatever
Tony Adams, or
whoever it was, or Keown, or whoever had the armband. So when you look at this group, what's interesting is you say there's no obvious choices. And the reason we're talking about it, because I just told you it's not important to me, but it is important. It becomes important if it's important to the players. It becomes important if it's a talking point at the club.
Yeah.
And it becomes important if you take the captaincy away from Aubameyang, right? You're saying this is important.
Yeah.
Part of your punishment is we're taking this away from you. It's interesting because we have really young, the obvious candidates, you keep bringing up Ramsdale.
For me, he's the outstanding choice. And I don't care people saying he's far from the action and where the ball is.
No, that's a stupid argument.
That is a stupid argument. For me, he's got the personality. He's got the performances. This season, he's been amazing in goal. Whether it's by his leadership, the way he plays with the ball, or all the saves that he's made. And I just think that even if he's only been there for 2 days, I think he would be a legitimate captain. I think the dressing room would respect that. Would welcome it too. If you don't give it to Lacazette because he leaves in 6 months, which is easily explainable, I think Ramsdale it will be perfect.
I mean, the idea is you often give it to older players who are more settled and who are leaders. The other obvious guy who might seem like an obvious guy from the outside would be Thomas Partey, in the sense that this is an older player. He's been a very successful player.
Yeah.
He plays in that central area in the pitch. He has a lot of personality. Is the reluctance there, perhaps, there's a reason he's not an obvious candidate, maybe that, you know, he gets injured or he's in and out?
Maybe there's that. Yeah, maybe there's that. I don't know I don't know him as well as Ramsdale, for example, or others, or Gabriel, who I've known well since he was at Lille, who I think could also be a really good captain, even if he needs, I think, to put himself out a bit more, other than his garage with thugs, you know, and just because he still lacks a bit of confidence at times in his own personality. I mean, not football wise. I think Ramsdale has.
Gabriel is the most. Well, he's probably the second most badass Arsenal player. Like in a street fight. Okay, number one seed, I'm assuming, would be Granit Xhaka for evident reasons.
Yeah, Kolasinac, because he's still in the squad. So you take Kolasinac.
Well, Kolasinac is like in a cage somewhere because he's just dangerous for you know. But so it would go Kolasinac,
Xhaka,
Gabriel.
Gabriel, okay. Yeah.
And I'm not going to ask you who the bottom three are because that would be rude. But it would be most of the Arsenal squad, I assume.
But you know what? As for a team that has lacked a bit of leadership and leaders in the last few years, I think it's interesting now to see this new generation who I think have the potential to have a lot of it, starting with Ramsdale, of course, but even others. I think it's interesting.
On the pitch, and talk about till the clouds come home, they need a center forward, right? There's no debate there.
Yeah.
I'm curious, when we talk about how much they can push out the boat, because, you know, I think you're in a position where if you can get a young impact center forward.
Again. They will go again under 23.
Okay. So they learned their lesson from this Aubameyang, Willian, really? David Luiz thing, which I went on. I got abused from Arsenal fans. Oh, no, Alba. How much? Come on, man. Seriously. There's a reason you don't extend players into the 30s.
Sometimes you do extend and it works out well. It does. Sometimes it does.
Yeah, you extend them a year at a time, but whatever. So if they're going to do that move, I'm trying to see, are there other immediate needs that you can spot? Or can you, whatever budget may or may not be there, should they just put all their chips on that? Because when I look at the rest of the squad, I'm like, okay, there's situations that you can upgrade, obviously.
Yeah.
But there's decent depth, maybe they could use another central defender possibly in the mix.
Yeah. Maybe.
Other than that, I mean, Sambi Lokonga is fine. No, then he's fine as backups,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, completely. Offensively, it's interesting because that was my next question to you. Who do you pick between Odegaard, Smith-Rowe, Saka, Martinelli? You can only have three of them. I don't think he will play all four of them unless you move Martinelli center forward. But I think you lose a lot of his ability, as we saw on the goal, from him to make those runs, you know, diagonal runs, or certainly from deep into the box, which he would not do as a center forward. So,
and you have Pepe as well. So you've got five for three spots, you're sorted. I think you do that on a form, on a week by week. See where the best chemistry is. Martinelli's only come back. Let's see how he fits with the others. But if it is a striker, are you looking for a powerful striker, a quick striker? What do you think Arteta is thinking?
I think he's thinking English mostly to start with. I think they want someone who knows the league already. I don't think they would say no to Vlahovic or Isak if they can sign them. I think they're also on the list. Whether it's possible or not, I don't know. But
my mind is racing to English strikers under the age of 23.
So I think someone like Ollie Watkins, for example, ticks a lot of boxes because he presses well. He's fitness-wise, he's very good. He's athletic, he's quite strong. He will develop his game back to goal and he will learn to hold the ball up better than he does now, etc. But I think on that profile is good. He's a good finisher as well. I think, you know, someone like Calvert-Lewin, again, those might be, they might be priced out or they might not be able to get them because they, Everton or Villa or whoever, might not let them go. But I think on top of the Vlahovic and the Isaks and those kind of European strikers, I think those are.
Can we say those four names are the wish list? Calvert-Lewin, Isak, Vlahovic, and Watkins. Ollie Watkins.
Why'd you do that face for Ollie Watkins? I think Ollie Watkins is a very good young player.
I think he is, but my difficulty with of those four, right? Very realistically, and I'm without ranking who's better. I have a clear idea of those four, who has the highest ceiling of those four. And in my opinion, it's Vlahovic who has the highest ceiling by far of those four. And you could argue Calvert-Lewin is the most proven in the Premier League because he has scored a lot of goals in the Premier League.
Watkins than Calvert-Lewin. If I had to pick, I would go for Watkins.
My difficulty, though, is that if you're Arsenal and you go to Everton and you go to Villa, those are two teams that do not have, they have wealthy owners and they do not have financial difficulties.
Yeah.
I know Everton might get into some issue with the short-term cost controls or whatever and the Premier League's version of financial fair play.
Yeah,
but realistically, you know, if they let Calvert-Lewin go after the way the team is going and the Benitez thing, you know, then the fans are going to come at them with pitchforks, right?
Of course.
And Watkins, I think it's a similar story with Villa. I don't know off the top of my head what his contractual situation is, but Villa are not in a position to sell. Now, obviously, if you show up with 70 million, hey, maybe I don't like Watkins so much anymore, right?
But whoever it is, it would be expensive.
But the other two, Vlahovic has a contract that's winding down. Now, we've covered this many times. His agents look like they're an absolute nightmare to deal with.
Yeah.
But, you know, Fiorentina are in a situation where they seem inclined to sell, maybe even in January, if the right price comes in.
Would Vlahovic go to Arsenal, though? Only if there's Champions League football?
No, I don't think that plays into his mind at all. I think from the agent's perspective, if you pay them, they're happy. If you go to Arsenal, you've got a big stage. The reason we keep bringing up old Champions League football.
No, I'm just wondering if it's an attractive.
No, obviously it's a plus, but I think people want a stage, right?
Yeah.
The Premier League gives you that stage, right? Vlahovic knows that if he comes to Arsenal and he scores 30 goals, then one of two things are going to happen. Either Arsenal are going to get in the Champions League, or, you know, City or United or Barcelona are going to, Real Madrid or whatever, are going to talk to him, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what you want as a player.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because I think if I had to draw a commonality between those four, these are all physically strong strikers. These are all quite athletic strikers who, of the four, maybe the one who has the least experience with the pressing game is probably Isak, I would argue. But, you know, they're all people who can still be molded.
Yeah, completely.
I think if Arsenal go down that route, I think they're going in the right direction.
Yeah. I would have loved them to even if you sign someone, because I would love them to keep Lacazette because of what he brings to the whole place. And obviously, you know, I'm completely biased here, which I'm very happy to admit, but I think he's I was talking to Arteta after the game against West Ham, and Arteta said about Lacazette, he's such an intelligent player. He's quite incredible. You tell him one thing and he does it straight away. He has so much to his game in terms of the press, dropping, finishing, encouraging everyone, all of that, which I think is very valuable in the dressing room. I can understand why you want to move on and et cetera, he's out of contract, all of that. But I still think he's a big value to that dressing room. And I think him leaving, when we talked about leadership and leaders, you would lose that side.
Sometimes we get those situations, right, where, you know, we've been doing this job a long time, where we have a real insight because we happen to know some of these players. So let me ask you about Lacazette. Viewed from man on the street, fan perspective, leave the business side away, right? Lacazette makes about £10 million a year on his current contract, right? I think he'd be the first one to say, oh, I am kind of overpaid given where the club is right now. If they were to go to him and say, Laka, we'll give you a one-year deal with the same amount, do you think he would take it?
It's a good question.
Or do you think he would say, wait, I'm not going to take it because you're still signed a center forward and then I might be on the bench and I'm in my 30s now and sure, I like living here and I love the club, but I also want to play.
Yeah, you see what I'm saying? It's not an easy situation for a player like him at that stage of his career where if he decides to go on free, wherever he goes, he can go back to Lyon, to wherever he wants, to France, go to Italy, go to Spain.
Barcelona. We haven't mentioned Barcelona.
Yeah, no, but you know, he will get signing on fee. He will get a big, I think, wage package because there's no transfer fees. You know, so
I think he'll be getting a pay cut on an annual basis. I think he might get
but
a
maybe for the wages.
Deal.
But that's the same if he stays anywhere.
Yeah, no.
So
of course, yeah.
You know, but in terms of signing on fee and all of that, so I don't know. It's tricky. What he's just enjoying his football right now. And we saw that against West Ham where, again, he missed a penalty, of course. It's a good save by Fabianski, but he was so good at linking up everything. And I think he could have a really, really good next 6 months now in the team with a good run in the team, the armband, whatever.
Let's talk about West Ham, just to wrap this, because obviously West Ham won the World Cup in 1966, as they love to remind
us.
But I am curious about this team's ceiling and what this club can become, in the sense that they have the big stadium, which I personally don't like that place. I don't like that part of London.
Well,
I miss the Boleyn Grounds.
I know, but I was there at Chelsea. The atmosphere was amazing.
Yeah, I know.
It really
it's all
was.
Plasticky, the mall, whatever. But they have that's something in place, right? So if you can generate the crowds, you fill the crowds, you have the revenue, you're in London, which is a big bonus in attracting foreign players. We've discussed this before. There's this Czech guy who's buying chunks of the club.
Yeah, very rich.
Can West Ham reach the level in terms of size, sustainability, success of the other London clubs? Could we? Because I feel like we've always had sort of Chelsea, Arsenal and Spurs and then everybody else. But can they create that?
Yeah, don't go too fast because it won't. I think it's a long process in the sense that establish yourself in the top eight first in the Premier League, and then gradually maybe bridge the gap with the others. I have to say I was very disappointed on Wednesday night. Really disappointed. I mean, I saw his job after the game, and he said we were not good tonight. We haven't been good despite the win against Chelsea. We haven't been good now for a few weeks, and Moyes said the same. But I still think that with the ball, with the players that they have, it should be much better than that. I still don't understand how Declan Rice can be played by David Moyes so deep in a game like that yesterday, when he's your best player by far. He's I think the best player in his position in the whole Premier League. He can do so many things, and yet you almost waste his talent by playing him almost as a centre back in a game against Arsenal, who is not City or Chelsea or Liverpool. And the lack of ambition in that game against Arsenal from David Moyes was like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I'm not.
Then you lose Soufal and you play Antonio right back or right wing back until that young Ashby comes on. And okay, maybe you didn't want to put Ashby too early because there was still 25 minutes to go, 20 minutes to go, whatever. But like, it didn't make any sense whatsoever. I was just like, what is David Moyes doing? And he's done a great job there. I'm not trying to criticize
it. It looked like he was looking for a set piece or a moment or a mistake.
The lack of ambition, really, Gab, yesterday on Wednesday night was very disappointing, I thought.
But, I mean, you're away from home. You're
Arsenal, who haven't, you know, like, been amazing this season. Okay, you go to City or Chelsea or Liverpool, but not Arsenal. This is a game that West Ham should win if they want to finish fourth or fifth.
I really like Moyes. I think it would be a tremendous story if they finished top four. I don't see them being top four at the end of the season.
No, but there's a race for fourth between Arsenal, West Ham, Spurs, United, and maybe someone else, right? The top three are
right.
out of this
race. Yeah.
So one of those teams could be West Ham. We'll finish fourth. But yesterday I was like, it was a team that didn't want to finish fourth, that didn't want to go away to Arsenal and try to win the game. And I was just very disappointed. When you've got Fornals, Lanzini, Rice in your team, Bowen in your team, and you don't mention
my man Suchek. I don't understand.
No, even Suchek. Yeah, but Suchek even with Suchek. The ball is not like it's not Declan Rice with the ball. Rice is way better than Suchek on average.
I've come around to the idea of Declan Rice. I think he played within himself a lot until now, and I really didn't understand why people were so big on him. Now I think this season in particular, I appreciate you saying he's playing deeper, but when he has come forward, I think he's shown a wider range of passing this year.
Yeah, so play him
than he
forwards.
Has before.
Play him higher up on the pitch. Not yesterday was
maybe
really
he would
like,
if he had his centre backs. You know, maybe he would.
I don't know. But right. they're still solid and everything, and I think they can finish fourth. But they need another striker in January for sure. Go and buy someone.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Gab. Just go to Indeed.com/Gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Enough Arsenal. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, guys.
Jules, I'm getting an ugly sense of deja vu. Oh. Manchester United's trip to Brentford gets postponed due to COVID, as does Burnley versus Watford. Other games are at risk this weekend. As I understand it, you're a qualified epidemiologist who spent many years studying this, viruses around the world and epidemics. Are things getting worse?
I think they
Dr. are. Dr. Lawrence?
Yeah. We've got 78,000 new cases, for example, on Tuesday in the whole country. And footballers are implicated?
Footballers are human beings and they get sick everybody else.
That's what I meant. I was looking for the word. I still don't know what word, but I don't know if the solution is to stop for a couple of weeks and have no games, like a mini winter break if you want. I think that could help, although if they keep training and be together, they can still pass it on to each other.
Yeah, it's a complex issue. The one thing that surprised me was, you know, the whole thing with the daily testing and whatever, and like in the championship they went to one test a week, then no tests and whatever. I'm like, guys, these are professional athletes who generate money. the testing is free in this country. The government literally mails tests to your house. Why isn't everybody being tested every day?
And vaccination. I'm sorry, but it's still a low number of players.
Daily Mail reporting that a number of clubs are considering not paying unvaccinated players who contract the virus, as has happened in some cases in Germany. Jules, does this seem fair to you?
Yeah, I've told you before.
You're Mr. Vaccine.
Germany. Yeah, no, but it's true. If you don't want to get vaccinated, it's your call. It's, you know, you have your reasons. We respect what you do. We said that with Joshua Kimmich. But then if you get sick, you don't get... Exactly. Because the club has said to you, we need you to get vaccinated. You still don't want to, no problem. But then don't come and still expect everything to be normal. If you then get positive, can't play for 10 days or even more. Not when you can have three doses.
The trade unionist within me says, if this isn't in your contract, and they already have certain things in your contract, like, for example, some players are banned from going skiing, because they're doing something that's dangerous.
Don't drive a motorbike, all of that.
Exactly, right? What gets me with this is, can you add it in after the fact? I'm not so sure. The other thing is, you can be fully vaccinated, right? But then you go to a rave and you sit there in the middle of hundreds of people, you put yourself at risk, and then you have a breakthrough infection through your irresponsibility.
Yeah.
That guy still gets paid.
But your club is impacted by your decision not to get the vaccine.
It's a difficult positive one. I don't see legally, you know, my opinion
of
lawyers.
Yeah.
I don't see how this could fly in this country, especially.
Impacted is the word I was looking for. The players who also get impacted, you know, when the whole country has a new positive virus. Jurgen Klopp, meanwhile, Gab, is outspoken as ever. He says that everybody at Liverpool is vaccinated and that club should be more open on who tests positive. You agree with that, right? You've always
1,000,000% about the openness. I hate
this. Why would you even hide it for?
It's so stupid. Like United the other day. A number. What the hell does that mean? Seriously. It's like in this country when they have the health minister come out and say, like, oh, this, just getting one jab offers some protection. what the hell does that mean? Seriously, you can't tell me? And the other thing, which is even dumber, is that after they come out and they don't reveal the player's name and they cite data protection and other nonsense, garbage like that, then they put the press officer on the phone with a friendly journalist briefing, saying like, oh, well, you know, it was so-and-so and so-and-so, but you know, they're better, they're asymptomatic, because they have to do it. It's so stupid. Klopp, you're 100% right. Cases in Spain as well, Jules. Luka Modric and Marcelo have tested positive and will miss the game against Cádiz this weekend. Big deal?
Big deal. I think they can cope certainly without Marcelo.
Don't laugh.
No, he's important in the dressing room. But remember, every time he plays, they don't win. I'm kidding, Marcelo. I know you're watching. For Luka Modric, we said he's been outstanding this season. Yeah. Maybe having a little rest.
Get some rest, the holidays.
He's forced to rest anyway. So
exactly.
It might not be a bad thing. Meanwhile, Gab, the European Club Association, the ECA, has written a letter expressing this concern about the pandemic and conditions in Cameroon, where the Africa Cup of Nations will be... at the moment, certainly, would be hosted, and they're even threatening not to release their players.
Yeah, so apparently, if you read it closely, it says that they're not clear yet on the protocols to keep the players safe and stuff, and they want more clarity on it. I'm assuming, you know, the AFCON organizers will provide, and CAF will provide,
like, have a bubble,
the protocols, and then they'll follow the protocols. If the protocols are fine, you have to release the players. Mm. I think it would be distinctly unfair. As far as we understand, I don't think the infection rates in Cameroon are sky high relative to, well, for example, England, where we live. Or most of Europe, where most of this stuff is going on. So I think you'd have to have a very good reason. Otherwise, it's more of the same ugliness. Ooh, we pay the players. We don't want to send you away. Simple as that. Yeah. All right, enough COVID stuff. How about some happier quick hits?
Yes.
Manchester City stomp all over Leeds United and it finishes 7-0. Wow. Jules, I'll let you wax poetic because I'm lost for words.
Gabby, it could have been 10 or 11. I think Ilan Meslier made 7 saves or 8 saves in the game and still considered 7. They were just so good. It helps when Leeds have loads of injured players and get some injured players during the game as well, like Shackleton. It helps when you're 2-0 down after 13 minutes, of course, but the fluidity, the movement with the ball, without the ball, was just fantastic. And maybe I think Pep is right now that this is the best team he's ever had at City since he arrived in the summer 2016. The way they play, the confidence, the momentum, the energy, everything is just... They would be tougher opponents, of course, but that was magnificent.
I couldn't pick out what I liked most that I saw in this game. And I think in the end, it's De Bruyne's goal.
Yeah, I was going to say the same.
To see somebody who, let's face it, De Bruyne does not exactly look like a brute or a man's man or a muscle man. But to see a guy who's such an artist go and just strike the ball so perfectly with such venom.
Yeah. And with both feet as well.
That's special.
It's pretty, it's
well, one
pretty
foot
special.
At a time. When but you're shooting off.
Gabby, a word on Marcelo Bielsa as well. The hipsters love him, of course, but there are people who seem to enjoy his struggles this season, and certainly that 7-0 defeat. Do you think opinion is still divided on him? Do you think he's under pressure, for example?
He may be under pressure. I don't know. Leeds, you know, running a business, they need to stay up. But it is funny because normally we see this all the time, right? You got the hipster type, oh, Bielsa's a genius, right? And then Pep says, oh, Bielsa's a genius. Oh, this is so special. This is so. And then you get the backlash, right? From the idiots who are like, oh, what does he want? Oh, trophies,
I know.
And look, the guy views football a certain way. He plays it a certain way. Yeah. And because he plays it that way, if you're going to play that way, when you've got starters out and you lose chemistry, it's going to be that much more difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
When you play against a team that can play through your press as well as City do, it's going to get that much more difficult. On top of that, you have injuries and City are really good. You're going to lose like this. I don't think Bielsa's right for any club. I don't know that I would want him coaching my club. But what he's doing is different and it's special.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think that needs to be appreciated.
And even when he shook hands with Pep, and we know the respect and how much they've known each other and all of that, being his mentor after the game. Even Pep, I think, was a bit sorry for the 7-0 defeat of Marcelo Bielsa.
Meanwhile, according to reports, Manchester United goalkeeping coach Tony Cotton was at the City-Leeds game to watch Ilan Meslier in the Leeds goal.
Yes!
It was not the best night to see him. Also, I don't fully understand this. You've got De Gea and you've got Henderson under contract. Why
so Anderson will go, all right? Anderson will go in January. Anderson can stay and not play at all.
But Meslier can go there and not play?
No. But Meslier at least is certainly not for January. I'm not even sure for the summer. But at least you keep tabs on him and maybe identify him as the next, the guy who will come after De Gea, which you can't ask Henderson to wait. Do you see what I mean?
But you can ask Meslier.
No. But Meslier is not at your club now.
No, I'm kidding.
But, you watch him and you
said,
okay, yeah, and you can already make contact and say, hey, we're thinking of you once De Gea goes or once De Gea, it could still be in 2 or 3 years, so different. Borussia Dortmund beat Greuther Fürth 3-0 as Erling Haaland scored another 2 goals. And I think has one assist maybe as well. And there's one header again.
Exactly.
Since
remember
we said
that.
He could not score with his head.
Well,
he worked on it.
He worked on it for a while secretly, didn't score. Now, look, and it was a really good header too.
It
wasn't just like he gets up off the ground, he makes perfect. Seriously, if he's got the physical gifts to make this happen. I mean, he doesn't need to
of
be
course,
Andy Carroll, but he can come close to it. If he adds this to his arsenal, I mean, he becomes close to unplayable.
I know.
Takes a while for them to get going, but Bayern stomp all over Stuttgart 5-0 as Serge Gnabry gets a hat-trick and Robert Lewandowski gets his usual 2. But Jules, I'm guessing you'd rather talk about Kingsley Coman.
Yes.
Since he's Paris-born and bred.
And that injury, didn't like that injury at all. Because I think, to start with, he was playing maybe the best football of his career. He was really outstanding in the last few weeks. And I just hope that this is not like a big stop and that he gets out for a long time or things like this. And I also think they need him. So good that the winter break is coming and then he can recover and hopefully be ready for after that. Sergio Aguero has announced his retirement from football, Gav, following a cardiac arrhythmia. How do we assess his career?
I mean, obviously, if you look at the numbers, I think, he scored a ton of goals in the Premier League. He scored a ton of goals for Atletico Madrid before coming over. He scored that iconic goal at 92 minutes and 30 seconds. That said, it feels kind of weird to me that, essentially, I kind of feel like his last 2 years at City, partly because of injury, but even before that, if you look at, I mean, Pep obviously said nice things about him, and it's always sad when somebody has to leave for these reasons. I kind of wonder, what if he'd made a different choice? What if he'd gone somewhere else? Because, look, we can look at, I don't think if you actually watch football, he didn't fit into that City team under Pep.
No.
He scored goals because he's a great player, and Pep is a great manager.
But he's not a Pep style of player, no.
But it didn't fit.
No.
And obviously, he got injured as well, so he might have still had the injury somewhere else. I just wonder, it's one of those where, weirdly, both City and Aguero might have been better off if he had left. Or is that a crazy thing to say?
I don't know, because I don't think, on the same hand, I understand what you're saying, but they would not have won as much if he hadn't, well, if he hadn't been there, or without him. Then maybe with another striker.
Well, yeah, presumably they, could, well, no, presumably no, know, they would have replaced him if he leaves.
Yeah, so. No, of course, but maybe not as prolific striker as the one that Aguero was. Yeah.
They don't have a prolific striker now, and yet this is, he says it's
true,
his best team.
That was a different time. I don't know. I like the quote from Pep saying Maradona conquered Italy, Messi conquered Spain. Okay, let's not mix, please, Aguero with Maradona and Messi. You know, this is not, as good as Aguero has been, it's not the same family. Well, it was, but, you know, it's
and
not.
Also, let's take it easy on the conquered England as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Reports in Spain say that Paris Saint-Germain have met Antonio Rudiger's agent and are trying to hijack a move to Real Madrid. Jules, your thoughts? Does Rudiger excite you? Do you need another older centre back?
I don't think that's true. Although, to be fair, Sergio Ramos, you know, you've got Kimpembe and Marquinhos, so they might be in for another centre back. But remember, Leonardo didn't want Rudiger when Tuchel was asking for Rudiger in the summer before he was sacked and before he came to Chelsea. So I'd be very surprised. Leonardo loves a free transfer, of course, a free agent. But I'm pretty convinced that the deal to Real Madrid is pretty solid already for Rudiger and his brother, who is his agent. So I'd be very surprised if he was not ending up at Real Madrid.
Yeah, I think Chelsea are going to take another run at Rudiger.
They should. They really
should. It does look like he's Real Madrid bound at this stage.
Of the top of the back four who all have contract, Christensen, Rudiger, Azpilicueta and Thiago Silva, who would be there next season?
I think there's a decent chance Christensen comes back if Rudiger goes.
Yeah. Thiago Silva extends.
Thiago Silva, if you want to do a hometown discount and keep him around, sure, why not?
Aspi?
Aspi, I think, is a similar situation, you know. But at some point, to stay and not play, you know, if you can get Jules Koundé or whoever else you might want, you know, makes sense to me.
FIFA have unveiled their agent regulations after revealing that $500 million were paid in commissions in the last transfer window. Gab, we're talking caps on agent fees, right? And is that fair?
That's right. So it's a total cap of 10%.
Which is already in place, you know, usually.
It's not, actually.
Well, but a lot of clubs don't want to pay more than that.
Yeah, they say, but then they go and they end up paying a lot more. The interesting thing about that $500 million is that the total spending on transfers actually went down the last 2 years because of COVID, and the agent commissions stayed the same.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that says about it. They still got to vote on it. It's a complex issue, but they're hoping to introduce these measures by 2023. It was third against fourth in the Bundesliga as Bayer Leverkusen hosted Hoffenheim, and it finished 2-2. Wild ending. 2 points drop for my boy Rico.
Rico.
Suave.
Oh, Gerardo.
I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name. Soane.
This was a really good game. Patrick Schick scoring again. He's been on this incredible run of form with a quadruple. I think he's 8 goals in 3 games, something crazy. 2 more today. And then
Diaby getting sent off.
Yeah,
I'm assuming he's Paris born and bred.
But he is Paris born and bred. We love it. They were 2-0 up cruising, literally in control of the game so much. And then conceded one with 10 minutes to go. And then you could see there's tying like almost panicking, and then consider second, then Diaby gets sent off, which is obviously not going to help with the suspension because he's been so good for them even in the last few weeks. So it's just a strange game where you should have the 3 points and be very happy, and then in the end you only have one, you've lost arguably your best player. It's one of those games. This is crazy. But credit to Hoffenheim, just to finish before you, Gab, they kept going all the time. You know, they were not playing well. They were second best by far the whole game apart from the last 10 minutes.
I think Leverkusen need to be very careful here because I think mentally, right, you have to get in your head that you're not going to catch the top two because they have much better teams.
No, but it's a huge chance for them to finish top four and go back to Champions League.
But that's what I'm saying. You need to think in terms of, okay, we're going to be best of the rest. We have a much cooler manager because he's Rico.
Suave.
And, you know, Leipzig have had their issues. Obviously, they got a draw
Gladbach
this weekend, whatever. The Hoff is behind who?
Gladbach.
Gladbach are imploding. I mean, I don't know if Uncle Adi's going to be around much longer. So this is your thing. And it would be a big statement if you're Leverkusen on that budget to finish third.
Yeah, definitely. Gab, reports in Italy suggest that Christian Eriksen will not be given permission to return to action. We saw him training with Odense. And there's obviously potentially an option that he could go back to Odense or maybe to Ajax or somewhere in Holland where you are allowed to play, as we see with Daley Blind.
Yeah. Look, I'm not a doctor, obviously. Yeah. But in Italy, they have these rules, these safeguarding rules that they say if you have this condition, you cannot play sports. Elsewhere, they don't have it. Daley Blind's been playing with a very similar condition for many, many years. I think those are choices that you have to make and you have to be comfortable with. I just find this incredibly scary. I just want Eriksson to be happy. He needs to play football to be happy, then so be it. You know, we only get one shot on this planet, as far as I know, unless you're Glenn Hoddle, of course, in which case you might get several. Sorry, Glenn. But you know where I'm going with this, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I don't understand why you can be banned in one country deciding that it's dangerous and you can't elsewhere. I can't wrap my head around that. Those Anthony Martial transfer drums keep beating. Now he's linked to Juventus too. Jules, you gave advice last time.
Yeah.
What should he do? Should he move?
Going to Juve or no?
Where should he go? What should he do?
It's an interesting one. I still think there's a lot of clubs who sees him as very great potential, a lot of talent, which he has. We've said that many times. And for some reason, he hasn't always clicked. He had good seasons at United, some really poor ones as well, really up and down. But I think a lot of clubs would think, okay, we can get him for not too much money, because I think that's what's going to happen. And at his age, French international, who can play in a lot of different positions, wide, second striker, main striker, whatever you want, different systems. And could go for him and say, yeah, you know what, we can sort of relaunch his career. I'm not sure Juve right now, in the situation that they are in, is the answer, and they are the answer for him. But I'm sure there would be a lot of clubs willing to take a pen.
I think anybody who takes a look at him needs to, A, spend a ton of time with him to see where he is mentally.
He needs, physically. A manager for that.
Because remember when he signed for United, right?
Yeah.
At one point, he was going to go to Chelsea, and then Monaco just kept increasing the asking price. And then in the end, it was that weird thing where there's like a million bonuses in there. And
if he makes the list of nominees for the Ballon d'Or, United would still have to pay 10 million to Monaco.
Which is mad. You almost wonder, why don't Monaco just, how much could France football actually cost? Why don't Monaco just buy France football, right? And surely it would be less.
You might not be able to put the clothes in if he's
but, company, but there's talent there.
Yeah,
but when you go back, if I go back and ask a question again, if you're United, do you do this again, knowing what you know now? The answer is most definitively no.
Part of me really wants him in Paris, just because of the story, because you know this is his club and his city. And if Icardi goes, I can see Icardi going to Juve, for example. Kylian will go, of course, and then buy Martial, not as your number one, but as an option there, and go and get Haaland or whoever you want to replace Kylian. I would love that. I think he would do
well.
You know,
there's more than one club in Paris.
I know there is, yeah. And Paris FC are right now in the places for promotion to Ligue 1. Right. So that would be...
Derby days ahead.
Cool. Sticking with you, Vicar, remember that Luis Suarez dodgy citizenship language interview and test exam or whatever? Well, it looks like somehow they won't face any sporting action.
They're not going to face any sporting... All right, to refresh everybody's memories, this is when, obviously, Luis Suarez... Even though he's been in Europe for 10 years, even though he's eligible for a Spanish passport, never bothered getting an EU passport because, hey, that's how he rolls, right? Then suddenly, because some countries have limits on the number of foreigners you can have, this is before he went to Atletico Madrid when he was still at Barcelona, he said, oh, yeah, wait, my wife is of Italian descent, so I can get an Italian passport. The problem is, to get an Italian passport, you also have to pass a language test and you have to actually study for it. And as it turns out, he just kind of rocked up on the day in his t-shirt and somebody taped the language test and it's obvious that the guy can't speak a lick and the director...
I can just see in my head him being in front of that guy.
So part of the issue was Juventus and Fabio Paratici, their sporting director at the time, who's now at Spurs, they were being investigated for their role in facilitating his exam, which is not a good look. Juventus' defense was, well, wait, we weren't going to sign him anyway because, you know, we'd already moved on to other players by the time he took the exam. And it looks, I think that's true. And I think that's a solid defense. It doesn't change the fact that, you know, so the criminal investigation into these ridiculous professors and stuff who passed him in those conditions is still ongoing. From a sporting perspective, though, I think it's fair to say Juve didn't gain any kind of advantage from this. And for me, it's fair that they don't get punished for this.
Yeah.
Okay, since it's a holiday season and we're all feeling generous, let's discuss Sport, one of my favorite Catalan dailies in Barcelona, definitely in the top two of Catalan sports dailies, talking about a Luke de Jong for Alexis Sanchez. I'm trying to think, can you do swaps that make both teams worse?
Well, certainly from Inter Milan's point of view, this doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I mean, apart from the fact that Luke de Jong is not a good player anyway.
I'm assuming Luke de Jong makes a lot less money than Alexis Sanchez, and so maybe makes sense in that
he's
sense.
A big money. Okay, maybe. But still, in terms of your... The strikers that you already have in Dzeko and Lautaro and then Alexis.
Correa.
But let's put those three first. Why would you bring Luke de Jong to that mix anyway? And I think Alexis Sanchez brings you something that the others don't, even if he's on a lot of money. He just scored a lovely goal, his first one of the season, so maybe there's a bit of momentum.
But
for Alexis, you would want to go to Barca because you probably would play more there.
Sure. Nicer weather, too, and there's the beach.
Yeah, and it's your own language. He speaks Italian, but still.
I think his Italian's better than his Spanish at this stage, but go ahead.
Probably, yeah. And you've been there before, although you had, of course, different manager, a bit of a tough time as well. But for you, it makes more sense. For Barca, I'm not sure.
For Barca, it makes no sense. What position are you going to play?
Play him
at center forward at his age.
Well,
little guy running around getting kicked. Because Memphis can't play center forward.
No, he can. But the other day you were moaning that Memphis was playing center forward.
So Memphis shouldn't be playing center forward either.
Okay, so maybe
if you're going to play with a center forward, play with a center forward. Don't put round pegs in square holes.
Who else do you think Barca could try to swap Luke de Jong for? Like,
I think Andy Carroll. I think Luke de Jong could have
an
impact.
Yeah. Hello, Reading. Yeah, this is Barcelona. Can we swap the arm?
Oh, we're wasting Reading references on a day that our producer Freddie isn't here. But you get my point.
It makes no sense. Maybe Alexis, who said, I fancy going back to Barcelona.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd be happy with it. Happen. Yeah, no.
Diego Maradona's daughter, Dalma, remember we told you the story on Monday, has arrived in Naples. But unlike what we were saying on Monday, Gab, it might actually be that she can't even get into the stadium.
This is so stupid. I'm just a quick recap.
Yeah, you were saying that she was allowed in some parts, but not all of them.
Yeah.
And now she's not allowed at all.
She's not allowed at all. Well, she has permission to go to the stadium from the city council that actually own the stadium.
Yeah.
However, there isn't, apparently, until Friday, the stadium has health inspectors there, health and safety inspectors. So she can't go in until Friday. And then over the weekend, there's nobody there to let her in because they don't work weekends.
Oh, my God. That's
And then on Monday, Napoli go back into the stadium to prepare for the thing. And Napoli, of course, have said, no. We are making the documentaries. We're going to make 30 episodes of a documentary of the history of the club. And 31 of those 30 are going to be about Diego because, let's face it. It's so sad. It's unnecessary.
Completely.
I mean, honestly, like, what are we squabbling about? Like, can you have too many documentaries about Diego Maradona? And also, I'm sure Napoli, you're going to make a great 30-part series about the history of your club.
Yeah.
But seriously, this is his daughter.
I know.
You know what? She's going to bring a different perspective to it. She's going to do her own thing. It's just so, so unseemly.
Really crazy.
The Sven Botman transfer machine continues. I think we need to make this a regular feature because I think this gives people some insight on how the transfer window works and how transfer reporting works. For those who have missed out on previous episodes.
Yeah.
Sven Botman, he's a tall Dutch central defender who plays for Leeds.
Left-footed, yeah.
Which
is really important, the left foot, because they're rare.
Yeah. Marco Materazzi, of course.
Yeah.
Second Matrix reference. Also,
I know.
Tall left, you stuck around a long time. But this, I don't know who this guy's agents are or whether he's given mandates to hundreds of people, but he basically pops up in every single transfer story ever.
Also because he's very good.
And
there's a lot of clubs.
Latest one I have is Milan. And maybe people are putting two and two together. Hey, look, we got to see him when we signed Mike Mignon and stuff.
Which they did. And also at some point,
they wouldn't know who he is.
Simon Kjær is not eternal, you know. He's not. So at some point, they will have to replace him with someone younger. Left-footed.
But the Sven Botman PR machine is something extraordinary.
It is extraordinary. And you know, I do think that a lot of clubs are looking at Sven Botman. I know it for a fact. I don't know if Milan, how serious Milan are, because he won't be cheap either. I think Lille are expecting at least 40 million for someone they bought for 8 million from Heerenveen, albeit after being at the Ajax Academy. maybe Milan say, you know what, 30, what we pay for Tomori, is what we value him, or is the maximum we can put, or whatever, so then he can go somewhere else.
Wait, they couldn't pull a deal like the Osimhen one, where they say, let's pretend it's 80 million, and then we'll send you these four.
Did you see that Lugani or Lugani in La Repubblica in his interview saying that he's never even put a foot in Lille after being part of that Osimhen transfer from Naples to Lille, and that he was then on loan, and so dodgy that deal.
For those who I don't know, Jules is talking about when Napoli signed Victor Osimhen from Lille, and I have a whole column out right now actually on player trading and some of the stuff that people do. I think the valuation in the end was 80 million like that. But a lot of that was players being sent over in part exchange.
Four of them. Yeah.
One of them was Orestes Karnesis, who's a 37-year-old
who's played one game for
reserve
them.
Goalkeeper.
He's still there.
At least he's still there.
Yeah.
The other three are kids in the youth team. One of them is playing like semi-professionally now.
Yeah, one is fifth division, fourth and third division or something.
Those other three between them were valued at 15 million.
I know.
There's some. It's part of the reason this is one of the transfers that's being investigated over accounting practices. But can you just tell you, just to settle the Botman thing, who is a better center back in Ligue 1 than Sven Botman?
So
Marquinhos,
Marquinhos. I still think Kimpembe is probably better. I think you maybe look into Salihamidzic at Marseille on a good day. At Monaco, I'm not sure if Badiashile, for example, who's young as well, is at the same level. I think Botman is great.
All right. That's a ringing endorsement.
No, it is. UEFA and CONMEBOL have announced a match between the European and South American champions here in London at Wembley on June the 1st, Gab. I can't remember who's the European champion, but certainly Argentina will be in that game. So whoever wins that become the world champion? Oh, no, because the world champions are, you know, here.
Not really, because if you're the Europe and South America, I'll remind you, are the only two confederations that ever won a World Cup. They're the two strongest confederations.
Yeah.
So if the champion of Europe and the champion of South America play each other, should the champion of Europe, who happened to be Italy, win, they become world champions. You know what that means?
Well, once they play against France.
What that means is we don't need to go to the World Cup. It doesn't matter what happens in the playoffs in March.
You get another star, like Uruguay, those fake stars.
we can add stars. Or like the stars that, as we established, when you wore that weird city top the other day,
with
the three stars.
Yeah.
Apparently, they just added those stars at random to make it seem more continental. Stars are something you got to earn.
Exactly.
That's why, like England fans, that's why you only have the one little teeny tiny star. One more star than Albania and Kosovo.
It's fading a bit because it's old.
Definitely fading. FIFPro have published their list of nominees for the FIFPro World 11. Now, let's be clear on this. FIFPro is, or I think it's actually technically called the FIFA FIFPro World 11. FIFPro is the International Players Union. They send these ballots out to their members. This is voted on by professional footballers who are part of FIFPro.
Yeah.
And I think what we've discovered is that professional footballers may be really good at playing football. They may enjoy watching football.
Yeah.
But they tend to kind of choose, a lot like Ballon d'Or voters, based on who's famous and who I see on TV and who's good on FIFA, right?
I mean, again, a list is very subjective, right? We could have a very different 23-man list.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody does. Okay. But who on earth? And give me the names, FIFPro. I want the names because those people should be named and changed.
It's thousands and thousands of people. But it's like the
who
PFA.
Who put Dani Alves in best defenders of the world? Who put Neymar ahead of Mo Salah as one of the best
forwards? Yeah, Mo Salah, by the way, not on this
poor
list.
Mo Salah. I mean, Mo Salah must have done something to FIFPro. You know, didn't pay his subscription or something.
No, but I was talking about this. Do you know why Salah is not on this list? Salah is not on this list, and then you have to understand
there's
this.
There's no reason why he's not on this list.
No, I will tell you why he's not on this list.
Go on.
He's not on this list because, again, footballers from all over the world vote on this. Many of them know their own league. They don't necessarily watch football except
big...
No, Salah is not on this list because the ballots were returned, I presume, in September, because Salah didn't have an international competition over the summer to play in, because Salah played for Liverpool and they went out in the quarterfinal, and because Liverpool just basically only scraped into the top four at the end of the season. Now, look, it wouldn't be my choice, but this is what people look at. Salah doesn't pop into their minds, whereas because Neymar is on television all the time,
well,
they put Neymar instead.
What, they watch Ligue 1?
No, the Copa place? America, the Champions League, Messi signs for Barcelona, and Neymar's there too. The M&M.
You know what? If you're FIFA Pro and Jonas Bear Hoffman, you can our friend, just add Mo Salah with your pen at the bottom of it, and then that's
Jonas, we give you authority to do this.
I know, you avoid all that nonsense.
Do you like the Dani Alves too, yeah?
Dani Alves. I mean, what a laugh.
That was a bit special.
Yeah, a bit special. Gab, can you please update us on Salernitana and the future, the whole sailing with the link with Lazio, not Lazio, Lotito, all of that?
Yeah, so this is... So basically, Salernitana, going into the season, they were promoted from Serie B to Serie A. They were owned by Claudio Lotito, also happens to own Lazio. This is illegal. He's using a loophole. He made some stupid appeal. He got a couple guys. Says, they've got nothing to do with me. And then the court said, nah, we think these trustees, as you call them, have a lot to do with you. So you have to sell the club by December 31st. And bids had to come in. There's certain deadlines along the way. The administrators say there's no bids have come in.
No one.
Local media reports say that there are three different groups that are interested. It's going to depend on the price. Technically, if nobody comes in and they decide to enforce the rules, Salernitana won't be allowed to play football as of January 1st.
Can they let them finish the season, for example? Because surely, even for Serie A, this is not good in the sense that it will screw the rest of the season because, all the teams, everybody gets 3 points against Salernitana?
What they should have done in the summer is they would have said, Lotito, you own this club. None is trusteeship, none is nonsense. You can't have two clubs in the same league. Salernitana, you guys were promoted on the pitch, but you're not getting promoted to Serie A. You're playing another season Serie B unless you sell this club by the time the season starts.
Yeah.
They didn't do that. Now they're stuck. And it's frankly just simply not fair to anybody. There is a group of local businessmen who said, we'll buy the club and we'll take it over so that we can finish the season. But Lotito's going to say, and because he's Lotito, he's going to sue them. He's going to say, I paid this much
delay
for the club. I want this much money. And the TV income needs to come to me and whatever. It's such an ugly situation, and it should have been avoided. Yeah. And again, I don't like lawyers.
Yeah.
Sevilla advanced in the Copa del Rey, but Jules, this was a hard slog.
It was. They were playing against a team from the second division, Andrzej, who are from the Balearic. Balearic, that's how you say it.
That would be Mallorca, Menorca, and
Ireland, exactly. And it was 1-1, and they had to win on penalties. And I know Lopetegui put a very, very different team, of course, is the Copa del Rey. But this is just not a good look if you then get knocked out by a lower division team, like we've seen many times, even Atletico Madrid, remember last season, and already some, already in this year's Copa del Rey. So you move on, you forget about it, but that was close. Really.
And 120 minutes of football when you've got to play this weekend again.
That's true.
Not good.
Tommaso Rocchi, the head of the Italy's referees, said that conversation between referees and players could be made public very, very soon, Gab. Do you believe him?
You know what? From the time that VAR was introduced, I've spoken to referees and heads of referees and assistant heads of referees, and they've all said, that would be a really good idea to have some transparency. You remember when France won the World Cup? And this is in 2018. I'm sure you do.
I do remember.
So the penalty, right? The Mandzukic, whatever.
Yeah, handball on the corner.
The whole thing about, VAR, not VAR, and whatever, it's down to the conversation between the referee and the VAR officials.
Yeah.
Now, we found out much later, I interviewed Pierluigi Collina, who explained what they said to each other. And so now we know why it was given. But, guys, this is pretty ridiculous. It's pretty ridiculous that was 4 years ago or 3.5 years ago? Mm-hmm. And everybody's saying, let's do this. Just do it. Stop saying how it would be a good idea. If you don't want to do it in real time because maybe something might be
swearing
said,
or whatever.
Fine.
Yeah.
After the game, release a transcript.
Clips.
And release a real transcript. Not what they do here in England where like PGMOL go and like they brief Dale Johnson and like other referee enthusiasts, this is what was happening and stuff. No. Just come out and own it. What do you have to... You've got nothing to hide. Just be grown-ups about it.
We saw in the A-League in Australia, working it well, where you can hear what the referee is saying.
Absolutely.
And then I think even for the players' language, they be careful and not abuse the referee like they do now all the time because they know that they're on mic and that people would hear and people...
But it's the same thing. Last night in the West Ham fan, right? If we could hear... even after the game, Taylor say, no, I had a really good view about it. You know, so Bank says, oh, are you sure? Maybe it's a bit harsh, blah,
exactly,
blah, blah.
Completely.
Like, looks like this happened, that happened. And he says, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
I take responsibility. Fine, I'd be satisfied with it. But as it happens now, I don't know what Taylor saw. I don't know if Banks slagged it up to him.
Yeah.
I don't know any of this.
Yeah,
you're the one who's telling me Taylor had a good view. Yeah, I presume that, but I don't know.
Yeah,
why don't we just remove
right.
all this?
It would be good.
Tom Holland, who plays Spider-Man, tried to get Kylian Mbappe to join Spurs. Jules, do you appreciate his efforts?
I do, Tom. Well done. Good try. It's worth trying. You've got nothing to lose, I guess, trying. They were together at the
Ballon d'Or
ceremony. Zendaya,
oh, there's a camera around. Let me see if I get some.
Zendaya was there as well, who is obviously plays in Spider-Man with Tom Holland and also his girlfriend in real life, like in the movie. And big Spurs fans and said to Kylian, hey, why don't you come to Spurs, hey? And then he goes, impossible. with a big smile, but well done, Tron. Faik Bolkia has been released by Maritimo in Portugal, Gab. Would we be talking about him if he wasn't the nephew of the Sultan of Brunei?
No, the Sultan of Brunei, of course, traditionally one of the richest men in the world. This dude is his nephew. He was at Leicester previously.
He
went to Maritimo in Portugal. That's a sweet story. Man who's richer than...
But he's not very good at football, right?
He's not very good that he can play professionally for Maritimo, apparently.
Okay.
I like the fact that he keeps trying. You know what? I have more respect for him that he comes here. Now, whether he gets these gigs... You know, it's a little bit like Saadi Gaddafi playing
in Italy.
But, you know, he puts himself out there because look, he could just as easily go and, like, play in the Brunei League, have a bunch of Muppets around him and dominate, right? which is a little bit what Saadi did back in the Libyan League back in the day. Anyway, that brings us to an end this week. Jules, you'll be back on Monday.
I'll be back on Monday.
I won't be back because there's a full slate of football and a lot of big games coming up. So until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.